Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another ultra-exciting edition of the Big Red Bus as we take out the beautiful monster on a Sunday afternoon. We've already recorded one show today with the quasi-legendary or approaching legendary status, our friend Mark from Australia. But now we have a real live legend on the line, which is a great stuff. And no, from you're in New Orleans, correct?
Yeah.
How you doing, brother? It's so good to have you on the Big Red Bus as we turn around, Doug and I, and see you in the back of the bus. Join us up here near the front, and we have a lot of beloved bull to discuss. How you been, man? What's the latest?
I've been good. The Saints just won a game over the hapless Browns. I just happened to watch. I hope you guys put my podcast on before Mark's. I don't want you to lose all your listeners after they listen to Mark.
I love it. The things are starting.
Got fired.
No, keep it going. Keep it going.
No, I love Mark too. Mark's a good guy.
Yeah, I had to edit about, you know, probably about 40 minutes worth of Mark's stuff. So, you know, it's a lot longer. Where this thing, we can just go right through with it. Don't even have to touch it because you're a professional. So. Well, love having you on, my man. It's always good to talk to you. So things are going well. You're getting ready for the season to start?
Yeah, likewise.
You're excited about the season starting? What's your schedule up until opening day?
Oh, man, you know, it's a really slow time for Bulls content right now. I actually have a story coming out at The Athletic next week on what the Bulls should do with Bobby Portis. So there are some, like, interesting off-season things. But really, I don't know about you guys, but I'm just counting down the days until we get to see some Bulls basketball here.
Amen. Amen, brother. Why don't we start out with that one, though? Because that is a topic at hand. I almost drove off the road the other day when I was listening to Mark Shinofsky's podcast, and he said Bobby wants $16 million per year.
Oh, wow.
Which I think is insane. You know, I think he could probably max out as a six-man of the year candidate. I don't ever see him as a starter. His defense just isn't good enough. I love his offense. But why don't we start out with that one? What do you say about Bobby Portis? And if you give us a little preview into this article, it might be a good idea.
Yeah, sure. I'll give you guys a little teaser. $16 million, that is, I don't think that he is going to get that much unless he plays out the year and has, like, an amazing year. If you look at, like, the average value for an average starter in the NBA, most people have that at around $15 million, so... I mean, Portis isn't even a starter, so for him to ask for more than that seems like quite a bit to me. The mid-level exception next year is going to be $9 million. I think most teams are going to have that available, so I think that, you know, it only takes one team, of course, in free agency. I think it's possible that one team could offer him that, so I think that's probably around the range where I would expect him to get, or where if I were the Bulls, I would match that type of offer or try to extend him for that price.
Amen. The Kings, if they have 16 available, I'm sure they'll throw it at him. What say you, Doug?
I actually am encouraged that he wants $16 million, because no one ever gets what they want. So if you want $16 million, that means you would hope you settle for around $12 million, which I didn't think is actually a decent deal for Bobby Portis. But it all will depend, assuming we're not talking about an early extension, we're talking about an extension next season. It will all depend entirely on what kind of year he has. If he has a great year, $16 million might end up being cheap. And if he has a lousy year or the same year, then $16 million will seem more expensive than we want to pay. So whatever the market is what the market is next year. And, you know, debating what he might get next year is always tricky. I'm hoping the Bulls sign 2 max free agents next year after doing a little financial magic, in which case we won't have room for Bobby Portis anyway.
To follow up, let's say he brings more of the same, which he had definitely some good moments last year on the offensive end, no doubt about it. And he does settle on $10 to $12 million. Is that a guy you see as a part of the future? Is that a guy you want on this team going forward? Or would you be happy to see, you know, replaced with something a little bit cheaper, a little bit less expensive?
Well, for me, I would definitely take him at that price.
Sorry, go ahead, Doug.
Yeah. I would definitely take him at that price, assuming we can't do something better.
Steph? What say you,
yeah,
Steph?
I mean, I think Portis is a really interesting player. Like, he's shown that he was pretty good last year, but obviously, like, they have Lauri Markkanen, who is going to be a much more promising prospect than him at power forward. You can say, you know, Markkanen's long-term future is as a center, but still, it's going to limit the effectiveness of Portis. They also have all these other front court players. You know, Wendell Carter is going to be playing a lot of minutes at center, hopefully. So I just think that it's better for both Portis and the Bulls if they can find a way to maybe trade him and get some value for him, and, you know, he can get a bigger contract. They can maybe get some more roster balance. Obviously, they're going to have this minutes crunch with a bunch of players, so that's about that I would go forward.
Hey, man, I'm on that, too. He's the one guy on the seven that I've identified as part of the Leviathan that I would probably be fine with moving for future pieces, just because I think he's never going to be ahead of Wendell Carter Jr. and Markkanen here, in my opinion. So
right.
He'll always be a six man, and there's nothing wrong with that. There's a lot of value in that. But if I want my six man coming off the bench in the front court to be defensive first, kind of like a la Taj, a little bit more as opposed to offensive first. So. And I think we got plenty of offense with Wendell and Lowry. So I agree. What I think you're take a little bit more stuff, 10 to 12 for him next year. I mean, I wouldn't be upset about it, what Doug said, but you know, I don't see him being a great fit down the road unless he really gets a massive improvement on defensive end. Let's move on to some Fred talk, which we didn't discuss this morning. And I'll start out with you, Doug, on this one. Fred Hoiberg, I had a nice laugh listening to Mark on the Locked On Bulls podcast the other day where he was talking about how the Bulls are probably going to scapegoat Fred for a poor season. And I was just like, because, you know, if they have a bad year, it was really difficult to combine all these personalities and divvy out the playing time. And I was just kind of like, well, that's a coach's job. Yeah, that's what you're in charge of doing, is figuring out who should be starting, who should be playing. And for once, without a doubt, the Bulls have not been to the top half in terms of offensive efficiency. They better be that this year. What say you about Fred Hoiberg? The question is, will he be the coach of this team next year at this time?
My guess is if they don't win close to 40 games, maybe even 40 is a good number, or making the playoffs, something around that, then I think Fred Hoiberg will probably be gone. I think that's probably the bar he needs to hit. I don't know if that's entirely a fair bar or not, but I agree that if they don't do well, they'll hold it at Hoiberg. They have a lot of young athletic talent that's developing. They have a lot of guys who can play offense. There are certainly a lot of question marks around these guys, but I think it is up to Hoiberg to answer those. As you said, that is the job of a head coach. I think so far the Bulls team has pretty much met my expectations. Every year he's been the coach, they've not done really better or worse than I expected them to. So he's not shown me anything, you know, terrible or anything particularly good. When I look at the way he handled some of the internal crises of the team, I don't think it's been great. So, you know, for me, he's a guy you probably don't want to lock into another contract unless something really special happens. So I think either way, he's going to be gone pretty soon for someone else.
Steph? What say you?
So in regards to the internal crises that you brought up, Doug, I think that, the first year he was here, the whole benching Noah thing, that was not handled very well. Then these situations that happened with Dwayne Wade and Jimmy Butler calling out their teammates, yeah, you could say that he didn't really handle that well either. I actually thought he did a really good job of locker room stuff last year, though. When the season started out and there was this fight between Portis and Mirotić, I think everybody thought that the bowl season was going to go completely off the rails. It's a really difficult situation to manage. Sounded like for a while there, the locker room was taking sides. And I thought the coaching staff handled that beautifully. I would not have guessed in a million years that those two guys would have been able to play together and also, like, play pretty well, you know, not show any hostility when they were sharing time on the court. So I think that is one aspect where you do have to give Hoiberg and the coaching staff a bunch of credit. I do agree that, you know, the first year he was here, it was a massive disappointment. I mean, the team didn't even make the playoffs, and he was talking about how they were going to be championship contenders. So that's a big strike against him. I think he has gotten better in subsequent years. Do I think that he's a top 10 coach in the league? Like, obviously not, but I don't think he's so bad that if they bring someone else in, they're going to do a better job. I mean, this is an incredibly difficult situation he's been put in every year. So I don't think the Bulls are just going to burn $5 million on the last year of his deal. I think that maybe they don't bring him back when his contract is over, but yeah, I see him finishing out that contract.
I like to say, you know, his first year here, I thought it lost in the question or not the benching of Noah, how it was handled. It lost in all that was it was the right decision. Noah had devolved quickly in the course of over a year from a first-team All-NBA to basically a guy who's not going to be in the league anymore. And it's unfortunate, but it's a fact, and it was true, and it happened very fast. And I thought it happened at the end of the 2015 season, Tibbs last year. So I didn't think he deserved to be a starter. I thought that was the right decision. And, you know, it's always going to be difficult to for a proud player like Noah to take that. Also lost in that disaster of a year is the Bulls were 21-12 at one point, and then they just were hit with, I think, the worst rash of injuries in recent memory. Every major starter was out for some period of time in that second half of the year, and they finished 42-40. Disappointing, no doubt, and they didn't make the playoffs. But also lost was that was Nico's best season. That was, in my opinion. He was fantastic in that second half of the year. I thought he did a lot of decent things that first year. The next year, three alphas, very challenging, and I thought he failed miserably. For some reason, he played Paul Zipser far too much. The Isaiah Cannon joke, regardless of how people thought he played in the playoffs, was a complete and utter joke. I thought he was terrible that season. You know, they didn't make the playoffs, etc., but I wasn't happy with it. Last year, I mean, that's a tough year to coach. Big picture, he finally has a team that's basically a glorified college team, right? Most of these guys are 23, 24 seniors in college. A lot of them would be. And you have offensive pieces. You're supposed to be an offensive coach. If you can't make this work, if we're not in the top half in terms of offensive efficiency, that's on Fred. We that's what he was supposed to be brought in here to be, and we've sucked pretty much for the most part every year. I think we've been a little bit better than I expected defensively overall, but that's what he's supposed to do. So he better come through this year, or else I have no problem letting him go. And I also feel that was clearly Gar's pick. That was Gar's guy. You know, with the whole Iowa State thing, that's not really a Paxson decision. I think Pax had kind of let Gar make that choice, and I don't think at all in any of his public statements, Paxson is an honest man. I don't think he's ever given him a real resounding vote of positivity for the job he's done. So if we have a disappointing year, and I agree, Doug, what that number would be, I think it's 35 or below, I think he's gone. And he should be, in my opinion. Any comments on that? I thought that was pretty insightful.
Way to pat yourself on the back there. I guess the only comment I would have is the Bulls pretty much hit my predicted win total every year that Hoiberg has been coached. So I've not really felt too strongly one way or the other. I think that team with the last shot with Derrick Rose and crew, I thought that team was just ripe for disaster, and it turned out that way. I actually quit doing my blog that year because I was so depressed about with the direction of the team. And, you know, so it ended up happening pretty much just like I thought it would. And the three alphas was a joke. There's no way that was ever going to work out. And that was obviously something you could see from the start, too. Those are just decisions where the Bulls were just trying to, you know, kind of hold pieces together until they could use cap space later. And I'm glad they didn't sign anyone to big, long, four-year contracts that were terrible like so many other teams. That was just a holding pattern to put butts in seats by signing some name players. So I didn't expect much out of Hoiberg there at all. But in the end, I think the only thing I would add maybe that hasn't been brought up is that sometimes teams don't want to have a lame duck coach because it starts to ruin his authority in the locker room, which is why I think there might be some pressure that they either decide to extend him or they decide to let him go at the end of the summer. It's pretty common that coaches don't end up playing out the last year of their contract. They either get bought out a year early or they get extended. And it would not be surprising to me if the Bulls ended up in that situation.
Any comments on that stuff? Do you agree?
I will say, like, from a locker room perspective, I've talked to a lot of the guys about Hoiberg, a lot of the players, and he is universally really liked there. He empowers the players. He's obviously like a player's coach. He's not a screamer. So, you know, I think, Doug, your points about a lame duck coach, those are pretty valid. But for Hoiberg particularly, you know, I don't think that he's going to lose this locker room.
Steph, I'm getting the vibe that you're really in his corner, that you think he deserves two more years to fill out this contract. Am I correct in that assumption?
No, I mean, if I were managing the Bulls, like, I would just move on from him after his contract is done. I mean, I think I've heard Doug say this before in the past, too, is that, like, as far as coaching goes, I mean, you could be a top six or seven coach, and you're going to make a big difference in the team. You could be a bottom six or seven coach, you're going to make a big difference in the team, too. You're going to tank that franchise. But all those coaches in the middle, of which, like, most coaches are just not difference makers, that's where I put Hoiberg. So,
yeah.
You know, maybe you look at a guy like Mike D'Antoni, he looked totally washed. found himself in a better situation, and he looks like a genius again. I think that's kind of the case for Hoiberg. He's kind of a system coach. He wants to run this very particular offense, and I don't really know if he's going to be able to do that in Chicago, even with this improved personnel. So maybe they just need to move on and find a guy with a different system that works with this group of players.
Interesting. Steph, you have a unique position in that. I think Doug and I are, we have our following, and I'd say on average, they're probably a little bit more positive on the future of the team than the majority of Bulls fans. Darnell Mayberry.
Yeah, putting it lightly.
Darnell Mayberry. I had an interesting conversation with him maybe 2 months ago, and he was talking about I asked him what's the biggest difference between OKC and here, and he just can't believe, you know, the negativity and the negative, the negativity pervasive in the fan base. Have you seen that in your job at least begin to change a little bit more for the positive with the acquisition of Lowry and that trade looking definitely a lot better than it did at this point last June?
You know, I'm not really a great person to ask that question to just because I work remotely. I live in New Orleans. I don't really get to talk to a lot of people in Chicago anymore. I go back a couple times a year because my family is still there. But you guys are really, you know, right in the middle of things. I think Twitter is kind of not a great way to get a feel for that either just because these Bulls fans, they tend to put themselves in a bubble as far as, you know, if whether you're in this, we'll just say for simplicity's sake, whether you're in this pessimist or optimist Bulls camp. And that's why, you know, I like talking with you. I like talking with the Ball guys. And, you know, I like hearing what these optimists are saying, too, just so I can get a better feel of just what the general tenor is around the Bulls.
Yeah, there's just about five of us. So it's a pretty short conversation, I mean. But, I mean, don't you get emails? Don't you get feedback on your articles, like, that are – I don't know, it just seems to me like it's been overwhelmingly negative, but I have noticed somewhat of a muting of that negativity with the hope that, you know, Wendell Carter Jr. looks really good. Markkanen looked really good. You know what I mean? Starting a maybe a little bit of a turn. Are you sensing that or am I insane?
I think that's true. Like, I think that people were in shock when Jimmy Butler got traded and especially the return they got from him. You know, I know you guys were a lot higher on it, but at the time it looked kind of low. I mean, you can say it wasn't anymore in hindsight, but, you know, now that Lowry looks like a stud, I think this rebuild looks a ton better than it did a year ago. I think they still have a lot of work to do. Like, they're not even close to the finish line yet, but, yeah, I mean, I think they are in a better situation than last year for sure.
Doug, what's your comments on that?
Still offended that I got lumped in with you in this whole category of, like, sunshine and optimism. I mean, I don't know how that happened. But I think, look, obviously people are happier now than they were a year ago. A year ago, you just traded your franchise player who was, like, a star player. And especially the people who don't follow the team at this extremely microscopic, detailed level, to understand the difficulty of the cap situation the Bulls might have been in or trying to build around Jimmy due to his age and some of the other things where it would have been difficult to really put all the pieces you needed to in the time frame you had to make something work, I think it would look just really bad. Like, you traded a great player and you got very little back on the surface. And so I understand why there was a lot of outrage from fans, and even the fans that were very, very, very knowledgeable would look at that trade initially and say, the number 7 pick, odds are that's not going to end up being a great pick. Just historically, you know, drafting at 7 isn't going to land a star. And then Chris Dunn had one of the worst rookie seasons ever, looked like a complete and total bust. Then Zach LaVine tore his ACL, and why would you want to get on that? So it's really obvious why there was a lot of negativity when that trade was made. But then now that you see some of these things turn and you see Chris Dunn looks a million times better, you see Lowry actually looks like a guy who should have been picked in the top 3 and a potential future All-Star, and Wendell Carter Jr., for those, you know, just terrible enough to have to suffer through summer league because they're that basketball addicted, you know, are now even more excited about him. So there's a lot of good vibes, you know, since that trade was made. Pretty much everything has come up pretty decent for the Bulls in terms of what could happen. So I think it's clear there's more optimism. You know, people I talk with are definitely more excited about the Bulls season this year than they were last year.
So, Steph, let's just pretend I bought the team and Pax, I put you into a position ahead of Pax. So like czar or dictator of the team, and you, I left the decision to you, fire Pax today or hire someone else. What would you do?
Can I just downgrade his role instead? I mean, I think he's a valuable executive. He has a lot of experience in the league, but I don't like him as the chief decision maker. I mean, I think that the Bulls are starting to give more lip service to analytics. I still don't think that Gar and Pax are really big believers in it. They're more like old school basketball guys, and that's fine. You know, that works for a lot of different general managers, but just myself personally, I'm more of an analytics guy.
Mm-hmm. So, and just so you know, both you and Doug would be in the running for that position if I bought the team.
Good choice either way. Yeah.
And I can tell you, yeah, one guy who would not be in the running, he happens to live on the seventh best continent, but we'll talk about him later. Let's get into a little bit of David Nwaba, I get your opinion on that. I'm not sure where you were on that spectrum of him being the second coming of Bill Russell, or were you fine with the move? And I was curious what your theory was, or your comments on my opinion that I think that move was done to give Chandler Hutchinson an opportunity and for Pax to take that chess piece off the table for Fred.
Oh yeah, I mean it definitely wasn't like a money move. I mean, he only made $1.5 million with the Cavs. The Bulls had salary cap exceptions they could have used to bring him back if they wanted to. But it's not just about Hutchinson either. I mean, I think they still believe somewhat in Valentine. They got to get him minutes. They aren't going to move Justin Holiday until, I don't know, maybe the trade deadline or something. He's got to play a little bit. So yeah, I mean, we talked about getting the players for Fred's system. Nwaba, he doesn't shoot very well from outside, but he's still very much a Fred Hoiberg player. They had plays in the playbook. They had one called Locomotive, where Nwaba would just get the ball and sprint test everybody on the defense and get a layup. If you look at the transition numbers, I mean, Hoiberg's whole system is about early offense and attacking transition.
Yep.
They haven't been able to do it, and that's why the offense has been so putrid. Nwaba was the highest point leader in transition baskets. He was one of the guys who was always running out, always trying to push the ball up. And it sounds really simple, but some players just won't do it. So I think Hoiberg definitely would have wanted to bring Nwaba back if it was up to him. Unfortunately, you know, that's not the case. And the good news is that the players that are replacing him, Chandler Hutchinson is also in that mold where he's going to be running as soon as he gets the ball. So hopefully they don't experience a drop-off. I think they still could have had both of those guys, and it would have been fine. I really don't see why they let go this valuable player for $1.5 million. Seems kind of silly to me, but you know, hopefully Hutchinson can replace that.
The good thing I'll tell you is that in all the video, and I've watched extensive amount now on Jabari Parker, that's to me the most underrated part of his game. I think he's absolutely fantastic in transition. When he's going downhill, I was blown away with how good he looked. And I want to see more of that with the Bulls. I think he's going to fit in great there. I know there's questions on the defensive end, but I think he's going to have zero problems offensively. Love to get your take on that acquisition. Were you happy about the Jabari Parker deal, or did you feel that they should have kept their powder keg dry and not made that signing?
Sorry, you cut out there for a second. You said, did I like the Parker signing?
Yeah. Did you agree with that move, or did you think they should have just kept that space available for other moves?
You know, I was kind of neutral on it. I mean, if they were up to me, I would have tried to use that space, try to get that Nuggets pick, but I don't think the Parker signing is a bad one. But a lot of people have talked about how, you know, it's low risk, and it is. You know, if he sucks, then they can just not guarantee that second year. They can not take that option. So, you know, he has talent. He was the number two or number three pick, I can't remember, when he was drafted. I think it's telling that the Bucks let him walk. They didn't really try to pursue him. They signed Ersan Ilyasova early in that free agency period and didn't save the cap space that they would have needed to keep him. So, I mean, he was kind of a disappointment there. Hopefully he can kind of reclaim his career. I think that he suffered a lot because of Jason Kidd. I think Jason Kidd was a really bad coach for him. So
no doubt.
Hopefully you know, some of these guys, like Victor Oladipo, you know, he just needed a fresh start. There's a lot of players where the fit just isn't there for him and they're not going to succeed. So maybe Chicago is the right fit for him.
I think it is. Doug, let's go to you on this one. Let's say there's, God forbid this happens, but I want to throw out some positions, and I want you to be the coach and tell me who you'd start in replacing him, assuming that it's Lopez at the 5, Markkanen at the 4. We're going to start with Parker at the 3, Levine at the 2, and Dunn at the 1. Let's say there's a time where, for whatever reason, Levine goes out. Who would you want to see at the 2?
I think you'd just start Justin Holiday at the 2. He's proven, he's solid, he can shoot, and you have enough other guys who can create offensively that it would be fine, especially with Parker on the floor.
And would you feel that same way at the 3?
Yeah, probably. I'd probably do the same thing at the 3. To me, Holiday is a role player. He's a guy who can come in and he can give you solid minutes on both ends of the floor, and it's not going to need a lot of touches, and you have enough touches in the starting unit. I think you'd probably prefer Valentine's ability to, you know, dribble and create a little bit and have a little bit more versatility in his game off the bench.
Yes, I think Valentine was the correct answer, but we'll accept both. Steph, what is your Steph, what's your take on that? Same question to you, 2 and 3.
I mean, just the fact that we're debating these options, I think, is kind of telling of what the Bulls' roster situation is. They say that they are, like, really pleased with their wing rotation, and that's why they let Nwaba go, is because they have too much talent there. I mean, we're arguing about Justin Holiday and Denzel Valentine, though. Those guys would be, like, I don't know, 7th or 8th guys on a good playoff team. So I think the Bulls really need to look for an upgrade there. It doesn't really matter which one of those guys they pick to play more minutes. They just need to find a more long-term solution at that position.
Okay. Do you feel
I think I would only note to counter that is that, yes, they are probably 7th to 8th guys maybe in a playoff rotation, but if you're losing your starter, that is the guy who steps up, right? Is the guy who's in that 6th, 7th, or 8th spot in the rotation. So if you've got two guys who are kind of in that range of a guy who's a role player, I think that's the expected depth that you would have. I don't think most teams have, you know, someone considerably better than choosing between two similar caliber players, you know, to fill in case of an injury. It's just the way the league is. You're not running 10 guys deep. So I think it's an okay position. It's not a position of strength, but I don't think it's a position of particular weakness either.
Assuming that Kawhi Leonard leaves Toronto for the West, and assuming that Kyrie Irving leaves Boston next year for the West, somewhere in the West, outside of Philadelphia, what do you feel the best team would be? Let's start out with you, Doug, for that one. So make that assumption.
Well, it's Boston, right? I mean, pretty easily.
Still, even without him. I guess
even without Irving, yeah, sure. I mean, we're going to assume that, you know, their young guys can continue to step up, and, you know, they played well in the playoffs. They still have Gordon Hayward, who might come back and actually give them, you know, something really meaningful this year as well. I mean, he was, you know, a quasi-max player who got a max contract when he signed. So I think Boston is trivially the best team in the East, at least for, you know, the first year, and probably even into the future, depending on how you see Tatum and Brown develop. But that's something, you know, we'll take a year to see where that goes.
So I was kind of asking a leading question, and it blew up in my face. Let's just assume.
Yeah, you're hoping for the Bulls. I get where you're going.
Well, I'm trying, I guess the better way of putting it, outside of the Bulls then, let's assume that happens. And the Bulls, Boston, and Sixers, like, who do you feel is positioned to potentially be better than the Bulls? And
I mean, like, yeah, the Celtics have so much going for them in the present and also in the future. I mean, they have 3 future first-round picks coming in. They have one in 2019 from the Clippers, one in 2019 from the Grizzlies, and one in 2019 from either the Sixers or the Kings. And, like, they already have the best roster in the East, arguably. So, I mean, I don't really see how any team can top that. Maybe the Sixers, but that's about it.
Yeah, it'd be great if dumb teams would stop handing first-round picks to the Sixers. I mean, to the Celtics for once. I mean, my goodness. How did that happen? It's unbelievable. So, I guess outside of Philadelphia and the Sixers, the question, let me rephrase it. What team would you trade places with for the future? I'm trying to get at, is there a team out there that you say, and you say, in 2 years, I'd rather have that roster?
From my perspective, no. I would take the Bulls roster right now if I had their window of, say, years 3 to 5 out from now. I think they have the best potential of the teams. But that still doesn't mean much because it's only potential until the guys prove it. And guys who came in this draft might be stars. A team that drafted a star this year might draft another one next year and easily beat them. So the fact that right now they're looking like a solid young team is encouraging, and we should be happier than we were a year ago. But it's certainly no reason to be jumping up and down and thinking, yep, we've got this all figured out. We're going to be a great team in the East, because they still have a lot of growing that they have to do. Their future looks a little bit better, but they're like a dot-com stock in the 90s. You know, it could blow up and be Amazon, or it could be one of the millions of ones that just go under.
Steph, do you agree with Doug, or do you like Indiana maybe better in the future? Do you like, I can't really, Charlotte potentially? I can't think of a team with a better future than the Bulls, but maybe I'm missing this.
I do agree with Doug. I like that analogy that he made where, I could see the Bulls being kind of boom or bust. It's still so early. I mean, I think that a lot of people are really jumping the gun in where this rebuild is going. It has solid footing, a good foundation, but, you know, you talked about how you don't like Hoiberg. Okay, so they still have to find a coach then. They still have to find a franchise player. They still have to find a quality starting shooting guard. I mean, it's just, the pieces they have in place are very promising, but there's still a lot that needs to be filled in here.
So you're down in New Orleans. What is the situation down there going forward? Do you feel that, would you say that you think it's likely that Anthony Davis re-signs there in the next few years, or if you had to put your money on it, would you say he's going to be somewhere else?
I mean, if I were Anthony Davis, hell yes, I'm re-signing in New Orleans. They can offer him the most money by a pretty large margin. Now, I will say that the management for the team has been really poor. They haven't done a good job of building a good team around him. Also, the fan base down here is not very good. They have trouble selling tickets, and he doesn't get nearly the exposure that he deserves. I mean, Anthony Davis is an amazing basketball player. He's, in my mind, easily a top 5 player in the league. But that's not really the consensus opinion, and I think a lot of that is the fault of the Pelicans. So if he is trying to prioritize winning, prioritize, you know, advertisements for himself and getting his name out there, then I think it does make sense to leave for a major market. And he did just change agents, so there's this speculation that maybe he's thinking of making a move somewhere else. But, I mean, like, he's giving up tens of millions of dollars to go somewhere else, and if it was me, I just wouldn't do that.
Doug, do you feel the same way? Do you think if you had to predict where he's going to be in 2 years, do you think he's going to be there or he's going to leave?
I think Stephen hit it on the head in terms of him not having the exposure he deserves, and I think that exposure will cost him far more than the money that the Pelicans can pay him extra. I think if they are not prepared to put a team that can really compete, have a chance to win a championship together by the time he's a free agent, that there's a very good chance that he leaves for somewhere else, even if he has to give up that with a Supermax deal, which it does pay him, you know, some extra and a good amount extra. But I think if he goes to a team and can win a title, that he will make that extra backup and endorsements trivially easily. And beyond that, he'll have the satisfaction of having won a title. So the real question will be, does a team emerge that can give him the extra endorsement opportunities, raise his awareness, or gets the awareness of him as a great player in the league, to get him the extra endorsement money and still have a chance to win a title? Is there such a team with cap space that is around? And if the answer to that is yes, I think he goes. If he just has to choose between, you know, trying to go somewhere to win but taking a big pay cut, or trying to go somewhere that maybe kind of is a little better, then I think the odds are that he stays. So it'll be a little bit dependent on what teams there are out there who can actually bid on him and how good those teams look.
Couple more big picture NBA questions. Will the Lakers make the playoffs next year? And if so, which team currently who made the playoffs last year will fall out? Let's start this one with you, Doug, and we'll go to Steph.
My spidey senses are tingling that you are trying to go into one of your hot-button topics, which is hating the Timberwolves, and wanting me to say yes, that the Lakers are going to be in and the Timberwolves are going to be out. I'm guessing that's the answer you're going for there. And honestly, it's hard to disagree with that. I think that very well might be the case, that is exactly what happened.
So you feel that you would bet that if you had to put money down, you would say the Lakers are going to be in the playoffs and the Timberwolves will fall out?
If I had to put money down, I don't know that I would put it on that because I think it's a really poor bet. But if I was forced to choose one way or the other, I think I would bet that the Lakers would be in. And if I had to choose someone to be out, I think it would be, probably the Timberwolves. Maybe the Spurs would be another good candidate to drop out. But I think I would pick the Timberwolves. I think they got enough internal strength there that it would be them.
I am a lot lower on the Lakers than I think most people. If you look at the West, I think, what if the Nuggets finished with like 47 wins or something and they didn't get in?
Yep.
The team that they have around him is just such trash. Like, I know that he is an amazing player and he's taken really bad rosters before to the playoffs, but he's getting older. He's had remarkable health. I mean, at some point that might change. So I just don't think that he, at the age that he's at, he can carry a team to like 50 wins, which I think he'll have to do to get this team in.
It's funny, Doug, your spider senses were a little off because I do kind of concur or agree with Steph that I look at this Lakers team and they have to be making some other move. I mean, Rondo, I mean, look at the guys they added this team, and I love Ingram. But I think there's a ton of other questions about the young players. Is Lonzo Ball great? I don't know. I think the jury's still well out on him. And you're playing 52 games against the West, where almost every night you're going to be playing against a good team. If Minnesota, without a doubt, they have a ton of talent. I love Towns. I always have been. And if Butler, convinces Glenn and Tibbs to stay there and not trade him, they're going to have a lot of talent. And so, I mean, I think they're definitely a more talented team overall, but, I guess with LeBron, all things were possible. It's going to be so fascinating, so interesting to see. But along the Tibbs topic with the impending explosion and disaster in Minnesota, we should probably touch on it. First question I'd like is, there's a meeting been called at breaking news. I'd like to know if you guys believe that meeting was called by Glenn, the owner, or Tibbs.
Illusion? I would say, we're waiting for you to direct us, we don't talk over each other.
Sorry, Doug.
You're the traffic cop, so we can't move without your finger pointing. I would say, if I had to guess, it would be Glenn, just because I can't imagine Tibbs ever calling such a meeting.
That's right.
It's just hard to
even
believe that's even possible, so.
And there was another report that came out, before we go back to you, Steph, that Towns' reps had to go around Tibbs to go directly to Glenn. And I had, snarkily replied on Twitter that, ironically, now Tibbs is going to go around Glenn to Jeff Van Gundy. So I think that's the next step in this process. what do you think who called the meeting? And more importantly, what do you think of that whole entire situation? And what do you feel is going to happen here?
I was talking during Summer League to John Krasinski, our athletic guy that covers the Timberwolves. He's probably like the most locked-in guy for the Timberwolves. And he was telling me that, these tensions in the locker room, that's definitely a real thing. I think, Jimmy Butler he's a fantastic player, but he can be pretty abrasive. We saw that in Chicago, and a lot of people take that not very well. So I think that Tibbs bringing in Deng, I thought that was a really interesting move, not in terms of personnel, but just in terms of locker room chemistry. I mean, Deng was such a huge component of the great chemistry on those early Thibodeau years, Bulls teams. Like, he was the guy that always organized team dinners, took the team out to movies and stuff like that. So I don't know if he can help that locker room in Minnesota, but I think that he does bring value in trying to do that at the very least. It'll be very interesting to see what happens there.
Great point. And to wrap it up, I do want to read something I read on Twitter today from Matt Inspector. And this quote right is what sets JB, Jimmy Butler, apart from the large percentage of the other players in the NBA. And he took this as a positive. It's from Michael Pena. Every time I watch Jimmy Butler, I think about this quote he told me last year. And here's the quote from Jimmy. Quote, unquote, "I think it's wrong for me to think that people want what I want, because in reality they don't. Some people are okay with getting drafted. Some people are okay with playing 2 years in a league, 4 years in a league, 6 years in a league. Some people are okay with just scoring a basket in an NBA game. I'm not okay with that. I'm not satisfied until I win a championship," he says. "I want everybody to work the way that I work, and it's wrong for me to think like that because people don't do it. But in my mind, it's just like, why? Why don't you want to chase greatness the way that I do?" End quote. I'd like your opinion on that quote. And I'd like your opinion on, is that a good attitude or a bad attitude for a leader? Let's start out with you on this one, Steph, and then we'll go over to you, Doug.
I think that if you looked up Michael Jordan's quotes, you know, he would say very similar things. The fact is that what you are able to say in the league depends a lot on how good of a player you are. You know, if Tony Snell is saying this stuff, then everybody's laughing him out of the league, right? But if LeBron is saying that, then people are saying, oh, you know, that's good leadership. So Butler's right in that in-between zone where, you know, he's not a top five guy, but he's probably in that top 10, 12. So, yeah, maybe he can get away with this. Maybe he can't. I mean, personally, I hate this leadership style. But, you know, it works for some people, so... If he has a monster year, then people are going to be looking back at that and saying, you know, good on him.
Doug?
Yeah, I would say it's lousy leadership, because all you're tacitly doing here is throwing everyone else you work with under the bus. You know, you're saying other people aren't working as hard as me.
That's right.
And, you know, I just think that that's a lousy leadership. If you're Michael Jordan, it may not matter. I personally don't think Michael Jordan was a particularly good leader. He was an amazing player, but I think Scottie Pippen was really the leader on that team, at least in terms of, you know, keeping the morale, keeping the culture up, keeping, you know, people, you know, going. And Jordan could lead in the sense of getting them critical buckets and getting them, you know, critical stops and doing everything on the basketball court you needed. But off the court, in terms of motivating guys, in terms of raising their game, I don't think Jordan was that type of player. And I don't think this style of leadership really helps anyone when you say it like that. You could come very close to this style, and it could be effective, but this is like very clearly is bringing down other people around you. It's not just saying I strive to be great and we should all strive to be great and convincing other people to strive to be great. It's saying I strive to be great, I'm surrounded by a bunch of guys who don't feel the same way, and I'm silly for expecting that, because of course other people around me aren't going to work as hard as me. So it's very exclusionary, and I think even, like, you could find stuff that's sort of similar that maybe LeBron would say, but everything I've heard about LeBron is he's very inclusionary, and he does bring up other people, and his teammates love him, and I don't think it's exactly the same thing, and I don't think it's about how good a player they are. I think this is really Jimmy Butler just, you know, thinking more of himself than others, and thinking that just because someone else may not be as good, that they're not working as hard or trying as hard or care as much. And maybe that's true, or maybe it's not true, but saying it like that doesn't help it become true.
Yeah. I agree with a lot of what you said. I don't agree. Number one, I don't recall Jordan ever saying this. Everybody knew that Dennis Rodman didn't show up to half the practices, and he didn't go to a lot of practices for that second three-peat. All that mattered was that, you know, he performed on the floor, and that was fine, because he was a vet, etc. I don't recall him, Michael, saying nobody works as hard as I do. But I could be wrong. And then I replied to that quote with, just curious, do you believe Jimmy has the detailed workout schedules of every teammate on his roster? Being a leader doesn't mean questioning the work ethic of everyone else. In my experience, some of the worst players on a roster work the hardest. And I firmly believe that. I saw in high school the worst players on our team were the guys who were the 14th, 13th, 12th guys on a roster, and they had unquestionably the best work ethic. They didn't have the skill or talent, and I can't stand quotes like this. I hate them. And Rondo was right to rip on. This is the exact vein of what caused the problem while he was here after that Houston game. People don't want as much as I do. They don't work as hard as I do. How the hell does he know? And Rondo called him out on it and said, "Listen, these guys work hard." You know, so. I think he's a horrible leader. I'm going to say it right now after I see stuff like that. I think he's a terrible leader. And, I you know, for whatever reason, he never learned that skill. And that this kind of stuff just drives me nuts. And I think the Timberwolves would be insane to give him a five-year deal. And I don't want Jimmy coming back to the Bulls. I love the guy. I think the greatest players step up when it matters most. And when we had a 2-0 lead on Boston in game three after Rondo's injury, he had the worst game I've ever seen from a superstar, quote-unquote superstar. So he's a great player, no doubt about it. He's one of the best. And I'm certain he works extremely hard. There's no doubt about that. I don't get it when he questions everyone else. That nobody's as, because they're not as good as you. They don't work hard. No, give me a break. Pound sand, dude. Anyhow, on that note, let me pull in this big red ball. Any other additions? Anything you guys want to wrap up? Well, Steph, where can we find you? Any comments?
Yeah, you
on
can find my work at The Athletic. You can follow me on Twitter too at StephNoh, StephNoh. And yeah, I'm usually live tweeting during the game, so give me a follow.
That sounds good. And I know I would never read anything about you saying that you write or work harder or spend a lot more time than any other athletic writers, because you're a good leader and team player there.
You might hear Mark saying that at Bulls HQ, but we don't do that over at The Athletic.
That's right. Exactly.
Wow. Well, I can say I outwork all of you guys on my podcast, and I say that facetiously as I've not posted the Bulls beat now in like 8 weeks. But if I ever manage to do one when Fred doesn't do all the work for me, then I'll come back with that quote.
See, I think we've come to a larger truth at the end of this podcast, and it's beautiful. It really is. Guys, I can't tell you how excited I am that we both had this moment as we pulled in the big red bus. Until next time, if any Bulls ain't basketball, and it was an honor having you join us, Steph. We love to read your work, and I can't wait for the season to start, man. You're one of the best when it comes to beat writers, no doubt. I got you. Casey Johnson's the Hemingway beat writers, but you're right up there with Casey Johnson. Who's a writer you want to call Steph, Doug, that you enjoy? R.R. Martin. George Martin. Wait, what's the guy's name again? Who's the guy who wrote Game of Thrones?
George R.R. Martin, yeah.
George R.R. Martin. That's who you are. How do you like that, Steph, if I start referring to you as that?
You write one story about a guy, and then he sings your praises for the rest of your life. Pretty good trade-off.
It's just a good life lesson.
And with that, we sign off with the George R.R. Martin of Bulls Beat Writers, the great Steph Noh, Doug Tonis. All the best to you, brothers. Have a great week.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
Go Bulls.